afternoon and welcome everyone to our next series in our next interview in our series of podcasts through the Women's Franchise Committee. We are highlighting leaders in franchising, and we are specifically taking a look at our previous Crystal Compass Award winners. I have the pleasure of spending some time today with Brian Schnell, who was the first male Crystal Compass Award winner back in 2009. And our goal today is just to have a conversation and talk about our careers, workplace challenges, and how we have worked in franchising for many years. That's the one thing that Brian and I share together, although we've done it in different fields. Brian is a partner and chair of a franchise practice at Fagree Baker. He is passionate about franchising and represents franchisors from all across the U.S. He's devoted more than 30 years into finding solutions and approaches for his clients and their challenges and opportunities. Brian has counseled both emerging and mature franchisors worldwide and has experience in dozens of industries where franchising plays a key role. Brian has been integral in the franchising industry, having served in a number of ways through the International Franchise Association. He's a past chair of the Supplier Forum, has been a member of the Franchise Relations Committee, the Legal Legislative Committee, the Membership Committee, and the Awards Committee over the years. He's served on the ICFE Board of Governors and basically has stepped up in any way the IFA has asked to continue to foster the franchise business model. So welcome, Brian.
Thanks, Emma. Great to be with you today.
I read through kind of your bio and all of your accomplishments and just think, wow, how can you pack that much into that career? Certainly, you know, you have been very innovative and very actively involved in the franchise industry throughout your career. And so, you know, and yet it was much later, I've been around 30 years, that you and I actually really ever connected. And so I've enjoyed the conversations over that time frame, getting to know each other. But, you know, walk us back a little bit into kind of how did you get started?
Yeah, I got started in franchising, Emma, by, you know, good fortune, dumb luck, whatever you want to call it, but it was fortuitous. It wasn't planned. I didn't, you know, take a franchise law course in law school. And so the good fortune was when I was looking for a first year associate position, I attended the University of North Dakota Law School. My dad was a North Dakota lawyer. And so the plan all along was to graduate from North Dakota and go back to my hometown in Dickinson, North Dakota, and practice law with my dad. But I met my wife, who also now is a retired lawyer, but she was a law student. She caught my eye that very first day. Honestly, our very first picnic of the first year law students. She caught my eye, and so we dated throughout law school and decided that when we got married that we wouldn't, going back to Dickinson, North Dakota wasn't high on her list. And so we moved to Minneapolis, and I, again, good fortune, received a job offer from the Gray Platt Moody law firm. And so my very first project, Emma, I still remember the day, September 8th, 1987, was for International Dairy Queen. And so my entire professional career has been in franchising. And it's because of that, you know, kind of opportunity that arose that I didn't know anything about franchising. I just said, hey, I'll do anything. And there was that opportunity at Gray Platt. Dairy Queen had just acquired the Orange Julius franchise system. And so I started working on my first FDD day one.
So, you know, as you said, you didn't in law school take a class on this. And so when you were asked to work on the Dairy Queen account and you started to get involved, it was certainly different than things you had learned in law school. So what attracted you to continuing your career with the franchise business model?
Yeah, well, and a big part of that story, Emma, is what is so, and again, you and I have talked about this and we know this, right? It's the relationship aspect of franchising that is so important from so many different respects. And that was true right away, that I had a great mentor at Gray Plant Moody, Pam Merkel, and she allowed, and she was the primary franchise contact for Dairy Queen. Dairy Queen, Gray Plant had, you know, 70 lawyers working for Dairy Queen because they had a small in-house staff, and there was the Moody family connection with Gray Plant Moody, and the Moody family was a big owner and CEO of Dairy Queen for years. So we had that close connection. So Pam allowed me to, you know, learn right away, was a great mentor. And the biggest opportunity for me, Emma, was I had an office out at Dairy Queen. And so I could go there, and I went there probably a minimum of 3 days a week, often around the lunch hour. And the general counsel, a guy by the name of Bill Zucco, and Bill and I are still friends. He took me under his wing, and I was a second year lawyer, a first and second year lawyer. And so he included me in everything, right? And not that I was playing a huge role, he just included me. And so I got to sit in on meetings where we would talk to the franchise development team. We would talk to marketing. We would talk about operations and what the next initiative was, or a troubled franchisee and how to deal with it. So I had this real world experience learning the franchising. And it wasn't, you know, go back and research something for 20 hours and write a 10-page memo that says maybe you can, maybe you can't. There was, you know, there's some of the core legal work, of course, but a lot of it was just understanding franchising and the relationship, franchisor-franchisee relationship, and what are the different franchise or prospective franchisee interests? What are the possible solutions? What are the pros and cons? And to see the leaders in at Dairy Queen make those decisions and how and why. Wow, talk about learning, you know, on the front line. And so that was the huge opportunity that I had, and then a couple of others at Gray Plant had, and we were able to, you know, build on that to develop this kind of franchise expertise.
And so when you started, and kind of like you said, in 1987, you know, franchising wasn't nearly what it is today. And so how have you seen from your chair franchising continue to grow and prosper through the decades?
Well, there clearly are, you know, significantly more businesses that pursue franchising, that utilize the franchise business model for expansion. So, you know, that was nearly not as common, you know, back in the late 80s and throughout the 90s. But I think that's where IFA and its members played such a key role, and the influence that IFA members and leaders had in, again, including others and making sure that if we're going to do this, let's do it right. Because what hasn't changed is, you know, the dynamics of, or the key roles and responsibilities of franchisors and franchisees. And again, you see this firsthand every day in your brand and network. I mean, franchisees are all in. And oftentimes it's the family business, it's the family investment. And so again, that hasn't changed, but it's, and in so many respects has gotten more complicated, and consumers demand change much more rapidly. And so that had, those are the biggest areas that I've seen, you know, change over, you know, 20 to 30 years.
Yeah, the one thing that remains true is often when someone takes advantage and is awarded franchise concept and a franchise business model, they are all in. And many times it's their life savings. It has created such a wonderful opportunity for individuals to pursue the American dream and be able to own their own business. However, you know, it always reminds me of what a responsibility that we all have as franchisors and suppliers, anyone who is a part of supporting franchisees, what an incredibly awesome responsibility that is.
That
one can't take it lightly. And as I've been in franchising, I started in 1990. I started working for a little known brand at the time. It became huge, but I was working for a franchisee initially before I transitioned into the corporate vertical. And, you know, by having that experience, it really makes me very mindful of the decisions that you make as a franchisor, that, you know, everything has a risk reward, a feature benefit, and it has to work for both sides. And I think that's been the biggest, you know, key for me throughout my career, is making sure that the changes that we make or the innovations that we undertake, that it's done collaboratively, because we have to be mindful that it's people's livelihoods. And, you know, never was that more demonstrated than in 2020 to me. I mean, even back in like the economic recessions, you know, you kind of had to, everything kind of pivots and improves, but, you know, we really saw it in 2020.
Absolutely. I think the importance of system change and innovation, you know, back 20 years ago, we talked about that in terms of, well, when your franchise agreement's up for renewal, or every 5 years, right? That was the kind of pace of change and innovation. And last year showed us that it's real time and immediate. But even before then, that's been, you know, evolving over the last, I think that's the biggest challenge / opportunity of the last 3 to 5 years for franchisors and franchisees, as our customers demand change, expect change and innovation. And yet, you know, human nature for a lot of us doesn't like change, right? And so you've done a phenomenal job, and how our leaders lead with that. And that's one of my favorite words. You mentioned it, Emma, collaboration, collaborative leadership. That's a difference maker. And again, it was very clear over the last year during the pandemic, and will continue to be, in my view. It isn't the products or services per se, but it's how system change embraces that, so that we're delivering on the brand promise to our guests, our customers, our consumers, that will indicate or reflect who's going to thrive and survive and who will struggle.
You know, I agree. And I think about, you know, my career, and certainly I really want to, you know, help our listeners really maximize the learning from you. But, you know, we've been at this a long time, and yet both of us are still so incredibly passionate about what we do. And so 30 plus years into this, how do you continue to inspire and motivate yourself first?
Well, I think you have to truly love what you do. So there's the emotion and passion in a real positive way. And you have to have an environment, you know, that allows you to thrive in that regard. And so for me, it starts with, you know, our family. My wife and I have 3 phenomenal daughters. Our oldest, Haley, is in franchising, works for Hot Dish Advertising. So she's part of the team with Don and Jen. And so it's the, for me, it's the family, and then the phenomenal friends that I've developed over the years in franchising, including clients, and including lots of others that, you know, that's why I love being part of the IFA, that there are, it's such a community that, you know, not only there's all the, and that's what I've missed more than anything, are the in-person opportunities and events and the like, but just knowing that we're there for one another. So it's, to me, that I'm an emotional, passionate guy that thrives on being part of something that's bigger than me. And so being part of the, whether it's a client team, whether it's our franchise team at Fagery, whatever it is, I love being part of something where we're making a difference collectively and collaboratively rather than trying to, you know, do it on my own.
Well, you have been a mentor to many over the years. And, you know, we all kind of, I see it as we pay it forward. I had some terrific mentors in my early days, and now, you know, I feel like I can pay it forward. But I'll talk a little bit about the Women's Franchise Committee. You know, as I said, you were the first man that was awarded the Crystal Compass Award. And I can remember when I first started attending the Women's Franchise Committee Annual Leadership Conference, it was all women. And I looked around and we were in this ballroom and there was like 40 of us. And it was Julia Stewart was the keynote speaker. She was with IHOP at the time. Mm-hmm. And before it was at that time that, you know, I really didn't understand until that time. I didn't understand the humongousness of franchising. And I looked on around me and saw these just incredible women. And it really drove me to really pursue franchising at an early age as a career. And a career in franchising is different than a career in corporate America to me. And then I think about how the Women's Franchise Committee kind of, you know, continued that annual leadership mission, and we embraced men to participate, and in comes wonderful men like you that were leaders and I consider titans in franchising. And so tell me, I mean, I know you got involved and have been part of, you know, franchising in general, and certainly a proud and wonderful proponent of women embracing franchising and having great careers. You know, when did that start for you, and kind of, you know, why?
Well, I think from the women's perspective, you know, the law firm at Gray Plant Moody had a number of very, you know, talented women lawyers. And so we had a number of women lawyers as part of our franchise practice. And then having franchise or clients that were led by women, I think played a huge role. And you hit on what I think the Women's Franchise Committee really developed the niche, or a little bit on its own, kind of separate from, you know, the more traditional IFA, was leadership, right? And to focus on leadership and to understand that that important role and how that can be nurtured, and how, you know, talking about it and having mentors, you really can develop, you know, leadership skills. You know, I talk all the time about, you know, in a franchise organization, that there are leaders at every single level within the organization. And so to recognize that and to try to empower, you know, people to really accomplish what they want to accomplish. So I saw that as part of so many different, you know, groups that I was involved in, and then to have the Women's Franchise Committee kind of fully, you know, take that on and do it on a regular basis, I think has been really, really significant. And then embracing it, you know, for all of us, men and women, and to understand, again, the leadership qualities, and to talk about it and to learn from one another. You can't just read about it, although I'm reading, you know, this book by Doris Kearns Goodwin now, Leadership in Turbulent Times. But again, I have for years tried to emphasize and create a culture of how important leadership is and what it means. And it doesn't mean that everybody has to lead in the same way. We all have to develop our own, you know, kind of leadership muscle and the like, but it just matters. I talk about difference makers, and I think it's one of the key difference makers.
I agree. I think that as leaders and people that are have the awesome responsibility of leading an organization, you know, I think that we have such a responsibility to pay people forward and to give them tools and resources and help mentor them along the way. And I look around the IFA and there's so many there. It is the one place that I feel you can just go up to anybody and ask them questions, and they are so, no matter if they're in the same industry or not, they will share. They are proud. They want to continue to encourage and develop individuals for this career. And I'm seeing so many, you know, young professionals. I think about, you know, the Fishmans and some of the things they're doing with the conference that are just for young people. That's kind of the next thing to me that I see as being such a great part of the IFA, is just the ability to continue to bring young people into franchising. And you look around and you just go, wow, you know, look at this awesome organization. If you were giving someone is just starting their career out today, whether it's as a young attorney who's thinking about the franchising side of law, or it's someone who's thinking about starting a franchise concept, they've got kind of a proven business model or coming into franchising, what would be your advice to them?
Be yourself, find yourself, and in franchising, and I think the legal profession is similar in many respects, it is about the authenticity and integrity of being part of something much, much bigger, and understanding the different roles and responsibilities that all the, I refer to them as stakeholders, all the roles and responsibilities that stakeholders have, and then how, you know, leadership and advancement can make such a significant difference in not only how people on the team, the culture, you know, we haven't talked about culture, we haven't used that word, but again, you and I know how important that is. And so developing that, if you have all the stakeholders, and that includes, you know, the franchisor and all its team members, all of its franchisees, its suppliers, you know, all feel like they have a stake in the brand, and play a meaningful role in the brand. I mean, just think about the power that brand has. And in my view, if we have that kind of culture and foundation, candidly, Emma, we can accomplish anything. And that doesn't mean it's going to be easy. In fact, I bring it on. I want the challenge, and we've had plenty of them, but we roll up our sleeves. And if everybody's invested and feels like they have a role, rather than, just to step back a little bit, because in my view, there's collaborative leadership, and then there's, and I'll overstate it a little bit to make my point, but there's command and control leadership, right? And command and control is, I'm going to tell you what to do, how to do it, when to do it, what happens if you don't do it, you know, and that may work from time to time. It may work. It may be in a crisis, right? When it's all right. But there's those. And so where are you on that spectrum? And my view is, if you're you know, in the middle or closer to collaborative, long-term, we're going to have more success because people are going to have more buy-in and have more, there's something here for me rather than just being told what to do, how to do it, and when to do it.
I remember early on in my career reading the book Franchising for Dummies, which, you know, Dave Thomas helped write. And mm-hmm. this was the first iteration. It's since been updated. I remember reading in that speaking about collaborative, or I call it directive. There was a quote in there that he said, you know, franchising needs to be about collaboration. And this isn't an exact quote, but the spirit of it was franchising done well is about collaboration. However, at the end of the day, the franchisor is the executive decision maker. You know, somebody has to make a decision. But just like you would in any organization, to get buy-in and to get, you know, the best possible results, collaboration typically gives you a better outcome, except like you said, in emergencies. But I'll never forget that. That has stuck with me since my whole career.
That's such an important distinction, Emma. And because I'll often get, you know, questions back when I talk about collaborative leadership, and I couldn't agree more. It's not a franchisor giving up its decision-making authority. It's not. And again, you know this firsthand. Franchisees don't want to vote. They want a voice. They want a voice. They want to be heard. They want to feel like you care. You ask questions, you listen, and then you make the decisions, right? I'm completely on board with that. That to me is not inconsistent with collaborative leadership like you described. And I think that is, for a lot of emerging franchisors, a significant challenge, because franchisees will have a voice and they will tell you, you know, what they're thinking, what impact your decisions are having on them. And so for a CEO and a leadership team of an emerging franchisor to know how to navigate through that is crucial. And I think it's why some emerging franchisors don't get beyond emerging. And again, it goes back to leadership, right? And the importance of hearing from folks like you as to what that looks like and how you've, you know, made that journey.
I think, and I add to that, sometimes the mistake emerging franchisors make, and I know you have a lot of experience with this and the Emerging Franchisor Conference, et cetera, is you don't have, even though your brand, you know, you're starting this, you have a business model, you make too many exceptions in the early days that devalues the brand and makes it hard to administer the business model. And that makes it very difficult. You cannot manage, you know, all these iterations of what you thought your business model was through agreements. I mean, that I just never seen that work.
Yep.
Work well.
Right. Absolutely. But if you have a challenge, you get franchisee input, you make the decision, everybody moves forward in that regard. That has some significant long-term impact in a really positive way, rather than different franchisees doing different things, one-off deals, or, you know, just saying, well, it's my brand. I started this brand. And so I'm going to make the decisions and maybe I'll listen and maybe I won't to what you have to say. I mean, so again, there's all those kind of forks in the road as you navigate this journey. And then, you know, that's why one of the things that I am proudest of is our, and you've attended a couple, is our Fagery Franchise Summit, right? Mm-hmm. Where we get people that I view as some of the best franchise leaders in the country. We didn't get to do it last year live, but we get franchisees there. And so you've been on a panel with, you know, franchisees like Tam Kennedy and Sonda Kitchen and Susan Rather. And so, again, you realize, you know what, there really is a lot of commonality. There might be different perspectives, but there's a lot of commonality in what we all view as what it takes to be successful. And so to harness that in a way that allows us to get what we need to do and get where we need to be as a brand, that's really, really cool.
It is. And you know, you've done so much work in helping and supporting young, as I said in the introduction, not just mature franchise brands, but in those emerging brands that, it, you know, it really, you have paid it forward so many times over the years. If you were thinking about starting a business, you had this wonderful franchise business concept that you were ready to start franchising. Who would you put on your all-star team as like your circle of advisors? I won't say, and maybe three or five people, not on your board necessarily, but who would, or maybe on your board, but who would be that circle of advisors to really help you launch that concept?
Man, well, it would be one franchisee of and the ones that I'm most that are near and dear to me that are kind of my go-to franchisees are Tam and Sonda and Susan that I mentioned. So it definitely would be one of those three. Somebody who has meant a lot to me in my career is a guy who just retired a year or so ago, Bill Killian. It was, he and I had such a, because he was the franchise litigator, right? And so he would be in the courtroom and see, you know, where the messiness of it, right? And so he and I, we often would go back and forth. He called me the warm, fuzzy guy, you know, the guy, the passionate guy. And he was a no-nonsense guy, right? And sometimes you had to be no more Mr. Nice Guy. And if a franchisee's not playing by the rules, you know, you had to enforce the rules. And as just one example, and we often talk about this with our emerging franchisor clients, the non-compete is the glue that keeps the system together, because we're not all McDonald's, right? And so when we're emerging, our brand, we think our brand means a lot, but it doesn't mean as much as McDonald's. And so those franchisees that, you know, don't want to play by the rules, you have to, you know, no more Mr. Nice Guy. And then, you know, what I just think of the, from a women leadership perspective, you know, somebody that's near and dear to me is Carrie Olson, who's now the general counsel at CKE. And my story there is, you know, for the first part of her career, she was part of the team that I led. And now I'm part of the team that she leads, because she's a client at CKE. And then, you know, just some of the leaders that again, you and I know well, like Mary Thompson, Christina Russell at Radiance and Sola Salons. So I think it's there just are so many women leaders that I think are really making a difference right now. So it's, you know, then there are the Catherine Monsons of the world that I, you know, we all admire, but it's some of the women leaders right now that I think are making a tremendous difference with their brands and have worked with emerging concepts that I would definitely include as an emerging franchisor.
Good. I think that's a pretty good team. Certainly.
I go to battle with those folks for sure.
Yeah, there was something I was listening to the other day. You talk about going into battle, and there was an interview that I saw done with someone that said, you know, when and it came from World War II, actually, totally off topic, but they said, every person I meet now, I think about, would they hide me? You know, not would they go to battle? Would they go to the mat for me? And you picked a good group. You picked a really good group. Well, you know, out of respect for your time and our listeners, and before we come to close, is there any one piece of advice that you could give our listeners in just a sentence or two about becoming strong leaders in franchising?
I think to be intentional and authentic in doing what you can to design a culture where every single stakeholder feels like they're a part of, or has a, another term I use, an undying devotion to your brand. If you can accomplish that, and maybe no one can fully accomplish it, but if you can strive to accomplish that, then I believe so many other things, you know, fall in place. And by that, I mean, I think we'll develop products and services. I think we'll have unit level profitability, or the chances of that are enhanced. Maybe that's the best way to say it, Emma. If we have that kind of foundation, the chances that all the other things that we need will be accomplished, I think, are enhanced, versus the opposite, where we don't have that kind of culture and we don't have that kind of buy-in. And then it becomes a struggle every single day. And then, you know, when I talked about the passion, people lose the passion. And so, you know, we pick our attitudes every morning. And if I have a team that has that kind of attitude and passion, we're going to get it done.
I agree. Well, I really want to thank you, Brian, for allowing us some time to spend with you to help highlight to our listeners those individuals that are really changing the future of the franchise sector, and for sharing your insights on how you've been such an influential person in the franchising industry, as well as such an effective leader and mentor. We really appreciate all you continue to do for the franchise business model and the many, many that you've mentored. And I hope our listeners really enjoy listening to our time together.